Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Is all of it from WNYC. I'm Kusha Navadar in for Allison Stewart. For her White Shoes series, photographer Nona Faustine captures herself interacting with historical sites in New York that have a dark legacy of slavery. And she does it while often wearing white stilettos and not much else. The White Shoes series is the subject of an exhibition at the Brooklyn Museum. The show is Faustine's first ever solo museum exhibition, and the first time her 43 white shoe pictures are all being displayed together. You'll see self-portraits of Faustine not just posing in front of sites like Tweed Courthouse, Wall Street, the Van Cortlandt House, but engaging with them. She places herself within these sites and forces us as viewers to question how we understand the history of slavery in New York and its impact. Nona Faustine is Brooklyn born and raised, and her exhibition White Shoes is on now at the Brooklyn Museum through July 7th, and she joins us now. Hi, Nona.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm thrilled to have you. And huge congrats on your first solo museum exhibition. It's the first time that all these photos are together. That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what came up for you when you were seeing them displayed together all for the first time, like they are in the Brooklyn Museum right now? How did it feel? What do you think makes the experience different, seeing them all together in one place?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, a phenomenal, you know, goal for me to have seen this body of work that is about New York City, you know, and the history of New York City, and in particular, the people, pioneers who really built New York City, our enslaved foremothers and fathers, see all of these images in one place. I mean, and what better place than the Brooklyn Museum, you know, a museum that I grew up going to and lived near all my life. So it's just feels so right, you know. And when I walked in and saw, you know, all the images on the wall, it just took my breath away, because this has been, you know, a labor of love for, you know, 11 years since I started this series in 2012. Just one mild correction. The shoes are not stilettos. They are like kitten heels. So,
oh,
you know,
thank you.
I make the difference because stilettos would kind of mean something different than these. Are kind of like Easter shoes. They're kind of like church lady shoes. They're like proper white shoes that, you know, women have been wearing, particularly African-American women have been wearing, you know, and I certainly have for ages. So I just wanted to make that slight that correction.
Yeah, and thank you for doing it, because it's a really important part of this collection of pieces. And in fact, in those photos, those white heels, we learned that in the exhibit you bought them at a Payless shoe source on Flatbush Ave, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because they create such an arresting moment in all of these images. What do you remember about the moment you first saw these heels, and why do they speak to you?
Yeah, I bought them next to Payless, a shoe store next to the King's Theater on Flatbush in Regent. And when I saw them, it clicked. You know, I have been thinking symbolically, you know, my work is conceptual and everything means something. And of course, the shoes are at the center of that. And when I saw them, they just encapsulated everything that I felt the white shoes could and more, you know. Wow. You know, they talk to, you know, proper lady shoes, the effect of Western beauty ideals on Black women. They talked about spirituality. They talked about white patriarchy. They talked about, you know, just a range of topics that all pointed to what I was trying to say in The White Shoes. Yeah.
Is that what you thought when you first saw them? Or was that, go ahead.
First I thought, oh, these are the kind of shoes that, you know, Queen Elizabeth would wear, you know, to church, or, you know, church lady shoes. They were church lady shoes to me, like I said. They were shoes that I was very familiar with, that I saw, you know, Black women with at church. You know, I grew up going to a Baptist church right across the street from my house. And so, you know, and of course my family, you know, was Christian Baptist. And then, you know, of course, but later we became Buddhist, but still my upbringing, early upbringing, was going to eat, you know, church and Easter and seeing these shoes. So, you know, they immediately, you know, but then you dig deeper into the like history or historical references of these shoes and looking for something to tie in, you know, all of that history and what I was feeling, the effects of white patriarchy and whiteness on the Black body, you know, and how we traverse the world as, you know, African-American people and the African diaspora. So it's really deep.
And this would have been about 11 years ago, I'm guessing.
Yes, I started the series in 2012, and the first images in the show is, you know, really in my apartment, and I'm doing a self-portrait, and I had the white shoes, of course, and that's the one with the crown and the white gloves and the, you know, shoes, yes.
And so over those 11 years, have your relationship with these shoes changed? By which I mean, do you feel different wearing them later on, 8, 9, 10 years down the road versus 11 years ago?
That's a good question. I haven't, analyzed that, how my relationship with the white shoes has changed. You know, just thinking off the top of my head, no, they haven't changed. They're slightly more scuffed up and dirty due to time. Definitely. They have seen a lot of asphalt and dirt and sites and things like that. They're pretty beaten up. My sister says, you know, definitely hold on to them because they may be, you know, end up in the Smithsonian one day. So,
right.
the white shoes, no, it hasn't changed, you know. It definitely hasn't changed for me, no.
Yeah, it still carries all of that significance that you were talking about. If anything, kind of like getting weathered, beaten up, like you're describing, just adds that layer to what you were talking about with the historical significance of those shoes. I have had very few shoes that I've kept for, I mean, I've got a couple that I kept for 11 years, but, you know, it stands to show the length of time that you've spent evolving this work. And you had mentioned body in your previous answer. And I think body is, you know, physical body is such a crucial, fundamental part of this series. You're the subject of these photographs and you stand nude in many of the photos for the show, which can be nerve-wracking for some people, especially when it's displayed in public for others to see. And there's a quote in the museum exhibit from you. You say, "I've never seen what this body, this brown, fat body signifies historically in museums or galleries." And I was wondering what you hope to communicate, not just through shoes, but through the human form standing in these places with so much dark legacy.
Yeah, it's deep. I mean, you know, I think part of the, idea for me in creating the white shoes was to see someone who looked like me in museums, on the walls, and in a really powerful way, not, you know, and my own idea of representation. And, you know, for me, that was the way I choose to go about it. I love history. Mm. I love New York City. I'm a native New Yorker. I love photography. I'm a photographer. I'm an artist. And I was able to put all three things in. And it was like the way I go about my life and move through the world, absorbing and being seen and not being seen, and the way my body has, you know, also been criticized, you know, or the fat body, the fat brown body has been criticized or not, you know, looked at as beautiful or not beautiful, strong, weak, you know, all these things. And it was like, I wanted something that spoke to all of that. Also the history of photography, the Black body in the history of photography, you know, and referencing that. And so, you know, it was a way of seeing for me.
One of the most provocative photos, for me at least, was they tagged the land with trophies and institutions from their rapes and conquests at the Tweed Courthouse in 2013. You took that photo, and in it, you're pushing against the courthouse itself. Can you talk through that photo a little bit, specifically with how you think through planning the shot, how it is to actually take that photo? It's a provocative image, and it seems like there must be a lot of thought, but also a lot of urgency when you're taking it to get it right.
Right. I mean, that was an incredible shoot. It was, I think, the second time I appeared nude in the city, in Lower Manhattan. The first one was 60 Supreme Court. So that day, and I went back twice, some time ago, back twice, or three times, and many times as I feel I need to capture it, because we're working very quickly, you know, trying to avoid, you know, arrest and spectacle, creating a, you know, huge disturbance. So, you know, we showed up that day, and the first one over my dead body, which is me going up the steps, that was like 18 degrees that day.
Wow.
And, you know, it was kind of simple, but it was scary. You know, it's always, my heart is pumping, the adrenaline. I don't feel any cold. I, you know, it's quite an incredible experience. But that one, I remember, I felt like I needed to go back. There was more to be done at that site. And, you know, that building sits on part of what is the African burial ground, a 6.6 acre cemetery of African enslaved men, women, and children. And actually remains from that cemetery is right on the sidewalk. And, you know, historians and scholars and people say that cemetery goes right even under that building. You know, when they created, closed the African burial ground, they built, put 25 acres of landfill on top of it. So it's deep underneath. But anyway, I just felt, you know, what it would be like to push that building off of the remains, you know, of a cemetery that has been, you know, basically, you know, just really have been disturbed. Our ancestors, to me, are not fully at peace, you know, and at rest. Their cemetery has been desecrated, and many cemeteries all over the country of African Americans, particularly early cemeteries of enslaved, have been treated this way. They're under parking lots, they're under schools, stores, you know, strip malls, you know, you name it, and parks. And so this is one of them. And that was the idea of, you know, just if I could remove this building from the ground of the cemetery.
It makes me think about our experience as students in New York, and specifically New York City. Growing up, folks aren't necessarily taught about slavery in New York City, maybe as extensively as is possible, about what all of these historical buildings around us represent. And, you know, you're born, raised in Brooklyn. When was the moment for you when you first thought, or I guess realized, the extent to which your home, New York City, has such a dark history of slavery that you can see in these spaces?
Well, it wasn't until I actually was walking past the archaeologists excavating the cemetery when they found it in the 90s, and they were about to build the Federal Tower on Broadway, and that, like many New Yorkers, was if you can recall, is when the city exploded, because, you know, for so many decades, we have been taught that New York City didn't have much slavery. We freed our slaves very early. And, you know, we were like, you know, a northern utopia of freedom. Mm. And it couldn't be anything, you know, further from the truth, that we had a large population of slaves, one of the largest populations out of the antebellum South, Charleston, South Carolina. And slave masters often vacationed here. They did business. They did trade. They brought their slaves here. It was a huge industry here. And so when they found that African burial ground, literally, of 10 to 15,000 bodies, they estimate, underneath the lower Manhattan, it blew the powder keg. It was like, you know, just blew the top off of history, you know?
When you think about that, that burial ground that you actually mentioned, the largest concentration, one thing we learned in the exhibit is that in 1790, I think this is what you might be referring to, Kings County had the highest concentration of enslaved people north of the Mason-Dixon line, something that somebody who goes to your exhibit will learn through the exhibit. I'm curious, has your relationship to Brooklyn, New York City generally, has it changed at all as a result of learning all this?
No, I mean, you know, it just make me, you know, yes, that history is definitely sad. Yes. The fact that our city founders and whoever is in charge of, you know, after slavery, tried all they could to cover this history up from us. Mm-hmm. And if you do research and you look into it, you see that after the Civil War, there were great attempts to hide this history. Yes, that makes me sad. But what makes me proud, if you will, is when you learn about the stories of the people, their resistance, you know, how they continue to fight and live, and how their hands and is still in the land, like they touch. If you can find references to them, they're still here. And to uncover that history is it gives me pride and joy, and yes, sometimes sorrow.
That's beautiful. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Nona Faustin, who's an artist and photographer, and we're talking about her new exhibition of her work on view at the Brooklyn Museum called White Shoes, on view through July 7th. Heels, not stilettos. Don't get it wrong like I did. What we want to also definitely get into is just the photography of it, because you talked earlier how there is this kind of trifecta of things that was coming together for you in this project, and one of them was your talent and your artistry in photography. As you're thinking about, you know, you just talked about uncovering these stories of hope and of strength. When you think of it as a photographer, are there any choices you can say or point to that you made to bring out that element in the photographs that you made, whether it's the kind of camera you used, the lenses, the lighting, anything that you chose to bring out that story of hope?
You mean my equipment? What kind of equipment I use?
Yeah, it could be equipment. It could also just be the ways in which you chose to frame a shot, taking it from a photographer's perspective.
Okay. You know, like, well, I get there, and for me, it's, not only is about, you know, a self-portrait of me, and but it's about the city. It's about capturing a little bit of this, a lot of the essence of the city, you know, of New York and its energy. And I guess I could talk about Wall Street, the one that is one of the most iconic. You know, I knew that site, you know, from research and how it looked, you know, in drawings and stuff. And that is where African Americans were put on sale. And all over the city, you could buy enslaved people all over the city, from hotels to coffee shops. I mean, you name it, but this is one of the sites. And so I, you know, it was about framing that corner, you know. I like landscape, and so landscapes and self-portrait, and being also a documentary photographer early on, you know, I bring all those sensibilities with me to every site. And so, even though it's a self-portrait, more importantly, it's about capturing, you know, that site, you know, landscape wise. And so, you know, first it's about framing that. And me stepping in is the easiest part. And so often, you know, I frame the image, and my sister Shannon, who is my assistant, also is the first person that I photograph at these sites. And she's my stand-in. And so once I framed the shot and framed her and photographed it, check it, then I come in to, you know, the frame and, you know, boom.
So it's actually like you're scoping it out beforehand. And it sounds like a special relationship with your sister to work through what it is you want to capture the day of, right?
Yeah. I mean, like sometimes, you know, most of these sites I've passed by them 100 times, you know, just like you. And then afterward, you know, it's about, but then talking about it in a way that captures the history and the moment and all of that, you know, so yeah, that's basically how it works.
And the photos are on view through July. There are 43 in total. Are you going to keep shooting the White Shoe series?
But no, not in this way. Mm. I feel like, as much as the series will always be a special part of my heart and everything, I feel that, I have more to say, but try to do it in a different way. I mean, I always will love history and love, you know, photography, and that's the challenge of being artists, right? Mm. Is to reinvent, to compose and come up with new ideas. And so that's the challenge, to next come up with another idea. Like, I can't change who I am. I'm always going to love, you know, and ask questions, you know? And so there's more to be done. There's more to talk about. I feel like I don't have to do it with white shoes on.
And so you'll give those white heels a rest. Nona Faustine is an artist and photographer. Her exhibit White Shoes is on view now at the Brilken Museum through July 7th. Nona, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. If you're following the college basketball tournament, and who isn't really, the women's teams are incredible. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Plus, Sochiel Gonzalez, Anita DeMonte laughs last. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to a trip you'll never forget in Denver, where summer sunshine sparks mountain adventure, where neighborhood strolls lift spirits sky high, and where music takes center stage at Red Rocks. Catch a baseball game at Coors Field. Step into new dimensions at Meow Wolf. And take flavor to the next level under the stars at a Michelin restaurant. Denver, always welcome. Plan your trip at visitdenver.com/summer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.